Hi, welcome to our lecture on cardio training. My name is Tom Seaborn. There's a big controversy of whether to do interval training or steady state training. Well, let's talk about them both. Interval training increases the total work performed at a higher intensity so that you're increasing your VO2 max. VO2 max is the amount of oxygen that gets to your working muscle in milliliters per kilograms of body weight per minute. So you're actually working harder, you're getting more type 2 muscle fibers. The type 2, remember, are the power fibers. And you're increasing your lactate and ventilation threshold. These are all great things. This means your blood lactate levels are increasing and your breathing rate increases. And your client's going to lose weight faster doing interval training. But, you know, interval training is harder. So let's talk a little bit about the studies. Tabata, which is a very intense form of interval training, they did a study and it showed that the benefits were huge compared to steady state training, increasing anaerobic performance 28%, whereas continuous slow long distance training didn't increase anaerobic performance at all. So intervals increase weight loss by not only increasing the total caloric expenditure during the workout, but increasing the fat and utilization both during and after exercise. But there's what's called the EPOC, which is excess post-exercise oxygen consumption. And that's kind of like what we call the afterburn. And by doing that, when you have this EPOC, that means long after your workout's over, then your body's still burning more calories because it has to replace oxygen stores. There's what's called phosphagen, the ATP-PC resynthesis, and then there's lactate removal. And since you have an increased ventilation, which means you're breathing heavy and your body temperature is increased above exercise level, all of that has to return to homeostasis. And until that occurs, the body's working harder, meaning burning more calories. So studies have shown that you can increase your caloric burn by 10 to 160 calories over the course of 24 hours. Well, actually, that's really not that much, but you know, it's a little bit, and every little bit helps. So EPOC is dependent on both how hard you're exercising, meaning the intensity, and then the duration of exercise. So it's both. It's both how hard you're working and how long that workout is. And the higher that, let's say you have an advanced athlete, then there's less of an excess post-exercise oxygen consumption. So there's less of that effect on high-level athletes. But even endurance athletes, high-level endurance athletes can increase their VO2 max, which means, again, how much oxygen gets to the muscles in milliliters of oxygen per kilogram of body weight per minute. So that's a great thing. In other words, interval training can increase endurance athletes' performance. So how do you design an interval training program? You have four parts to it. You have the work or the effort interval. You have the recovery interval. And then you have cycles. So you might have a work interval of 15 seconds, a recovery interval of 45 seconds. So that cycle is a minute, and that set, you could have minute sets of your certain particular program. So the work interval means that the exercise is performed at a higher intensity than just steady state. And this all depends on your client's goals, their motivation, their fitness level, their health, the different energy system that they want to work. And, you know, it's sport specific, like we talked about in other lectures. If they're training for an anaerobic sport like tennis or basketball, they want to be able to do a lot of work in a short period of time. So that's a great person to train using interval approach. So the higher the intensity, the shorter the work interval. And I teach spinning, so we do interval training throughout the class. And the greater the intensity, like the faster I have them pedal, meaning the higher the RPM with the tremendous amount of gear that they're on, then the shorter that interval will be because they're working so hard. And then the rest and recovery will follow that intense effort interval. So rest and recovery can be a lower intensity, and a person shouldn't stop. Like, let's say they're on an exercise bike. If they're pedaling vigorously for the effort interval, they shouldn't stop pedaling for recovery, because during recovery, the lactate in the blood is being recirculated if they're pedaling. But if they stop, completely stop, then the lactate just sits there and it really hurts. So that's why, you know, if you want someone to quit an exercise program, have them sprint and then just sit down, because then their legs will feel like lead. So there's different types of recovery. There's the lower intensity. So like if you're on an exercise bike, just pedaling slower. And remember, the higher the work intensity, the longer the rest needed. And that's why I discussed earlier the 15-second effort with 45-second recovery, kind of a 1-to-3 ratio, which is recommended for most of your beginner clients. And you have the active rest and the passive rest. And so the key is make sure that your client rests enough between effort intervals and they'll be able to perform greater, you know, much better performance on their effort intervals. So there's different types of cycles. You could have, let's say we talked about the 15-second effort, 45-second recovery. You could do that for 1 to 20 cycles, depending on the intensity that your client wants to train at and their conditioning. You know, if they're conditioned to the point that they can do 20 intervals, then that's awesome. So these different sets, it's kind of like sets and reps in the weight room. So the set is the number of times a series of cycles will be performed in a given exercise session. And again, the longer the rest period is given between sets. So that, let's say you have a 15-second effort and a 45-second recovery, and you're on your 15th set, and you can tell that your client is dying, you know, they're having a hard time keeping up, then give them a little bit extra rest between sets, you know, if they need that. So let's talk about the different energy systems that exist, because you'll program your intervals depending on what energy systems you want to utilize. There's the phosphagen, you know, it's called the phosphagen system, which is ATP-CP, which is the quick, you know, short energy system. There's the glycogen system, which is still short, but then there's finally the aerobic system, which is, you know, we talked about the long, slower distance. And then there's actually beta oxidation, which is where most of you are now, where we're just in a seated state and listening to this lecture. But the phosphagen system, the substrate used is the stored ATP and creatine phosphate, CP, ATP-CP, creatine phosphate. The duration is less than 30 seconds. The intensity is 95 to 100% of max. And an example of the phosphagen system is like a 100-meter sprint or doing a powerlifting rep, or, you know, those type of short bursts of power. And an evaluation of the phosphagen system would be having your client do a vertical jump. Now, the glycogen or lactic acid system, the substrate is glucose or glycogen. The duration of this work would be between 30 seconds and 3 minutes. The intensity, again, is pretty high, between 85 to 95% of maximum. And examples of this would be like a 400 to 800 meter run. And to evaluate someone's glycogen lactic acid system, they would do something like a 300 yard shuttle run, which many of you may have done in high school. I remember doing that. And then the aerobic system, the substrate again is going to be glucose, glycogen, fatty acids, and amino acids. So the longer the activity, the more your body will dip into your fatty acids and amino acids instead of just using glucose and glycogen. The duration of aerobic system is longer than 3 minutes. The intensity is usually less than 85% because you don't want to go anaerobic. You don't want to be huffing and puffing and burning. Examples of this would be a 1,500 meter run all the way up to, you know, something like 3,000 meter cycling. And to evaluate somebody's aerobic system, that's where, again, I remember doing this in high school, would be like a 1.5 mile run. So let's talk about all these systems. The ATP CP, remember, it's about 30 seconds. The rest would be like, you know, 0 to 90 seconds, and you could do between 8 to 10 reps and 4 to 5 sets. So the work, remember, the work interval is 0 to 30 seconds. So it's going to be, you know, real high level, fast, powerful. And then give your client a good 90 seconds to rest, or some type of maybe easy pedaling if they're on an exercise bike. And you can do 8 to 10 reps of that and 4 to 5 sets. The glycogen system, the effort interval is like 30 to 60 seconds. And they would rest then between 90 to 180 seconds. And you could do about 5 reps and 3 to 4 sets. And the aerobic system, this is where, again, the work interval goes longer. So it's 2 to 3 minutes, and it's a 2 to 6 minute rest. And again, usually kind of an active recovery. And then doing 4 to 6 reps and 1 or 2 sets. So in interval training, there's the different thresholds. They have the anaerobic threshold, where at first you're aerobic. And that means, you know, it's aerobic means with oxygen. So you're breathing, you're jogging, whatever. And then you start sprinting. And so as you increase you start to feel a huffing and puffing and burning. And that the burning is the hydrogen ions, which also concomitantly is the lactate. And then the huffing and puffing is your ventilation threshold, so that your client is reaching all of these thresholds at similar times. So the anaerobic threshold defined is the point at which the energy demand shifts from aerobic to anaerobic. The lactate threshold defined is the intensity of the exercise at which there is an abrupt increase in blood lactate levels. And what you'll find, if you correlate that with heart rate, that's like an 80 to 90% heart rate in these individuals when they're training. Their heart rate is that high when they reach these anaerobic and lactate thresholds. The definition of a ventilation or ventilatory threshold is the point where ventilation deviates from the progressive linear increase. So you're kind of, your client's just jogging along and breathing very steady state, and all of a sudden the increase in speed causes their breathing to become labored, and that's beyond that ventilation threshold. Well, there's a psychology of interval training, because it's hard, it's tough, and it creates a significant distress, especially for untrained people. The hydrogen ion accumulation, that's the burning you feel, and the lactate, and the respiratory difficulty, and the core temperature increasing, and it causes sweating. And so this high-level work has to kind of fit the psychological preparedness of your client. So again, start slowly, progress gradually. You can use a heart rate monitor to measure how the intensity of your client's workout's going. And there's all kinds of different formulas, but be careful with these formulas, because on a very well-trained individual, a lot of these formulas can be thrown out the window. For example, the maximum heart rate, there's a formula depending on age. So you subtract your client's age from 220, and this supposedly is maximum heart rate. But in many of your very fit clients, this isn't exactly true. So a way to get a maximum heart rate a little bit more effectively is, you know, again, making sure that your client's in good physical condition, has gone through all the physiological and medical tests necessary. Then they can sit on an exercise bike and pedal until they're, you know, they first warm up, and then they're huffing and puffing and burning a little bit. And then at that point, measure their heart rate and do that several times. And that is possibly a truer maximum heart rate than the one that you're getting from a formula, again, depending on how fit that your client is. So there's all kinds of different heart rate zones that you'll find in the literature. Zone 1 is 50% to 60% of your client's training threshold. Zone 2 is 60 to 70%. Zone 3 is 70 to 80%. Zone 4 is 80 to 90%. And zone 5 is 90 to 100%. And there's all kind of myths involved here. Like zone 2, they call it a fat burning zone, but that's not true. There is no fat burning zone. You actually burn more fat and more calories the harder you work out, so in zone 5. But you'll see on exercise machines the quote fat burning zone to keep people on the machine longer. And it's true, at the moment they're utilizing fat as the substrate of choice, but if they were to actually work harder, if it was within their capability, then long after their workout is over, through EPOC, they would be utilizing more fat. So again, beware, there is no such thing as a fat-burning zone when it comes to training. The best way to burn fat is to work harder, burning more calories, and then you'll be burning more fat. Another way to measure your client's intensity is what's called perceived exertion. Borg's perceived exertion scale was from 6 to 20, but most of us just use a regular 0.5 to 10 scale, or 1 to 10. And it's kind of like where 1 or 2 means they barely feel any activity, and then 9 or 10 is they're huffing and puffing and burning and feel like they can't go on any longer. So there's a variety of different activities that you can use on treadmills or any other type of device where you can program workouts. And whether you use the treadmill interval, for example, you could have them at the same speed and go at 2% grade for 1 minute, and then for the next minute go to a 4% grade, and for the next minute go to a 6% grade. Or you could keep them at the same grade, you know, on that treadmill, and increase their speed a half a mile per hour for 1 minute, then increase the speed again a half mile per hour for the next minute, and increase the speed a half mile per hour for the next minute. And, you know, on a bunch of these slides, you'll see all kinds of different ways to vary the program. And you can be as creative as you want with this. But remember, with your novice athletes and clients, train mostly easy. You know, don't try to do high-intensity training more than 2 to 3 times a week, because your heart needs recovery. For intermediate to advanced athletes, they might be able to get in another day, but still, you have to be careful of overtraining. One method to determine if your client is overtrained is to have her learn to take her resting heart rate in the morning before she gets out of bed. Have her do it for 7 consecutive days and to kind of get an average median score. And then, if she notices one day that her heart rate is maybe 10 to 20 beats greater per minute than normal, then that means that day should be a recovery day and certainly not an interval day, because her body's trying to tell her that she needs to recover. And on that note, there's a lot of ultra-endurance athletes that are coming up with all kinds of heart abnormalities, from atrial fibrillation to scarring of the heart. And the research isn't conclusive, but there's a lot of anecdotal studies to show that when people train for marathons or 50-mile races, running races, or 100-mile cycling to Race Across America type, then a lot of these individuals develop heart abnormalities with age. So again, keep your eye on the research there. So designing your cardio interval programs, you can use all kinds of different strategies. You could use a ladder principle where, you know, you gradually increase the speed as you're moving up the, quote, ladder, or pyramids. And a pyramid, for example, would be like 15 seconds effort, 15 seconds recovery. 30 seconds effort, 15 second recovery. 45 effort, 15 recovery, a minute effort, 15 recovery, and then go down the ladder, 45 effort, 15 recovery, 30 effort, 15 recovery, 15 effort, 15 recovery. So that's an example of a pyramid. There's a variety of mixed intervals you could use. Like, you could say, okay, 5 seconds effort, 10 seconds recovery, and then keep that 1-to-2 ratio until your client gets really good at that, and then you could actually literally go 15 seconds effort, 30 seconds recovery. So 15 seconds of effort is dramatically more intense than just doing a 5-second effort interval, and your client will gradually improve to be able to do all that. There's another type of interval training. It has a funny name. It's called fartlek training, and it's all that means is that the work interval and the recovery interval are all dependent on how your client feels. So she might jog from one telephone pole to the next, and then she feels great, and so she sprints to the next telephone pole, and then she doesn't even have a telephone pole. She just jogs again until she feels ready, and then when she feels ready and raring to go, she sprints until she feels a need to recover. And so in that way, we call it speed play when we're on a bike. So you're going to according to how you feel instead of a programmed specific training program. And be careful that your clients don't work too hard all the time. And I see this. I see that, you know, your client wants to see great results. So, you know, she doesn't do the recovery period. So she'll do like 15 seconds of effort. And then during the 15 seconds recovery, she's still spinning, you know, if we're on a bike, pedaling, at, you know, 100 RPMs. And she won't be able to work as hard during her next effort interval. And so teach her to utilize those recovery intervals so she can work harder on the next effort interval. And also between training sessions, your heart and your whole body needs to recover, especially your central nervous system. So teach your client that taking a day off here and there is really good in that it'll help her actually reach her goals more effectively because she'll be able to work harder on the intensity days. So remember, in all of your activities that you do, no matter what it is, you can increase the intensity by, one, increasing the movement speed. You could, if you're doing some type of aerobic dance, increase like a traveling move. If you're doing an activity like on the floor, you can lengthen the lever so that if you're lifting your legs off the floor and lift your legs instead of bent knees, if you extend your knees, then that lengthens the lever, so makes it more difficult. Or you can add some type of propulsion, which, as we discussed in the power lecture, jumping type drills, which will increase intensity dramatically. Well, thanks for joining us for cardio. We'll see you on the next lecture.